We're back on Unbranded. This is Timothy Maurice Webster, actually, and we had a really wonderful show with Gareth. Thank you so much, Gareth, and the team, as always. CliffCentral.com. You can find us here. Clearly, you're already there if you are listening. You can hit us up on Twitter at CliffCentral.com, and you can hit me up at Timothy Maurice. If you want to chat today, today's subject, I'm really excited about it. It's about the psychology of the consumer. Why do we consume what we consume? Why do we buy what we buy? Are we just puppets on a string? As you know, with Unbranded, what we do, we want to go behind the scenes and figure out what's really driving us. To set up today's show, I want to share this with you. Sigmund Freud's nephew, really, really fascinating guy, Edward Bernays, he really sort of created the public relations industry. And before I get into the conversation with my wonderful guest today, Mrs. Marcella Ospina, I want to just share this with you just to sort of set the tone. Mr. Edward Bernays was, you know, he studied his uncle Sigmund Freud's papers and really sort of influenced the world in terms of how and why people consumed. He triggered one of Lehman Brothers' founders, one of the major guys in on Wall Street, to think really differently about consumption. Paul Mazur from Lehman Brothers says, "We must shift America." This is in the 1920s. Before the idea of branding and marketing came about, he says, "We must shift America from a needs to a desires country. People must be trained to desire, to want new things, even before the old was entirely consumed. We must shape a new mentality, and man's desire must overshadow his needs." Can you imagine? He says we basically need to trick people into consuming things. And that's how I want to start the show today. We brought in an anthropologist, a woman who works at the intersection of anthropology and marketing, to discuss this. Are we puppets? Are we tricked into buying things? Today's conversation is going to really sort of follow this sort of narrative to look closely at why do we do what we do? Why do we buy? And at the end, we're going to look at how to give tips to marketers and advertisers and help people sort of understand better relationships with brands. So I'd like to welcome to the show Ms. Marcella Ospina.
How are you? I'm well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in. It's really, really good to have you in studio.
Thanks for having me.
Is this your first time in Cliff Central?
Yes, it is.
Well, I feel very, very honored to have you here. And I'd like to say, first of all, I want to know, have you listened to the show, any of the shows before?
I have not.
I'm traumatized.
I have to be honest.
Okay, so I want you to go on your phone right now. Get your phone, please. Thank you very much. And I want you to go to @cliffcentral.com, www.cliffcentral.com, and save it. Thank you so much. So we can hear that you're not from here.
I'm originally from Colombia.
You're from Colombia, yes. And you came to South Africa? How long ago?
I came in 2003, which apparently is only 12 years and not 13, yeah. As I thought. Yes, I was in the States, and then I came here after.
And you were in New York in the States?
I was in New York. I was just trying to find a way of studying there, but that didn't happen.
Okay. So you came to South Africa and you found this passion between anthropology and marketing. You sound like you love people. You're curious about people.
Yeah, I actually found that in Colombia because since I was little, I wanted to be a writer. So I had a fascination for characters and for the lives of people, especially fiction. I think I was quite dramatic. And then what happened is that I found anthropology, and it was like a really good channel to understand people and to write, because as an anthropologist, you tend to write a lot. And an aunt of mine was the CEO of an advertising agency there, and that's how I found the intersection. It was long ago. I was 22, so
it wasn't that long ago. 22 is not that long ago. 20, you look 24. Oh. Okay. Okay, so your love for sort of people and sort of marketing, sort of helped you sort of, you know, position yourself for this career that you're in. Tell us a little bit more about the type of people you work with and type of consulting work you do.
Yes, well, it ranges. A part of the work I do has a big B2B component.
Yes.
So let's picture it. I go into an office building or where people work, and people give me some of their time. And during that time, I analyze what possibly can be influencing their business decisions and their process of decision making to either engage with a number of other businesses that service them, or how do they make decisions in regards of buying things. Okay. So that's one aspect of the work. The other aspect of the work is digital and mobile, and that's more assessing digital agencies and telecommunication companies on how people behave in regards to technology and how technology influences their behavior.
Okay.
So that's a B2C, I suppose. And then the other component of the work is just a lot of writing and a lot of understanding how people make decisions. And from time to time, I get called in by direct clients who need specific things from me.
Okay. So for anyone who wants to follow the conversation now, you can tweet us at CliffCentralCom. You can go to www.cliffcentral.com and you can send us your details if you want to know more about Marcella. Your website is Marcella, MarcellaOspina.com.
Yes.
And we can find more about your writing there. Where are you published? Is some of your work published?
I suppose I do number of interviews which I have done recently, and yes, there's some stuff on FinWeek,
okay,
and then also on strategic marketing as well, which is going to be published in April.
In April,
yes,
okay, awesome. Yes. Now, let's take us back to when you were a child in Colombia. Mm-hmm. When you were a teenager, were you like every other teenager and you wanted the latest things, or what were you like as a young girl, like 13, 14 years old? Did brands matter to you at all?
The thing is, I was quite underground. So I remember me liking music a lot, so my money would go into that. I don't know if that's a brand thing, but it's definitely something you can market to teenagers. It taps into lifestyle, so I suppose it was big. Brands, no, my parents were quite left-wing, so no, brands were not featuring until I wanted a pair of Dr. Martens, but which is like when I was 18 or so.
And now, do you feel that you are independent from the pull of society? When you see a marketing campaign for Manolo Blahnik, or you know, so you're, you know, I can see you dressed lovely. Are you one of these people who have, you go through retail therapy? You know, do you experience these things, or are you an alien? Are you above the rest of us?
No, I think you're gonna laugh at the answers I'm gonna give you throughout this interview, because I actually hate shopping. So I've developed this new habit of online shopping, and my friends bring me stuff from overseas. But that's because I know the shops and I know that the clothes fit me and whatnot. So yes, I am a consumer like any other. It's just that my habits are slightly different in that I don't like going to the actual shops, and I don't like overpaying for what I know it's worth less.
Oh, wow.
So, but then again, it's my work, so I do understand one or two things.
Sure, you understand. And so do you have any apps that you consume from on your phone?
For online shopping or for
Online shopping or any shopping, yeah.
No.
You don't? Okay.
I don't. I go into the people's websites, and I have a few, Old Saints being one, Urban Outfitters being another one, and COS. They all in Europe, and I go and I buy from their websites.
Okay. So South African retailers haven't been able to convince you yet. So I'm gonna tweet a couple of retailers to sort of tease some money out of you.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it comes to understanding the consumer and how many consumers are physically sort of like chained and to a relationship. So as soon as a new product comes out, as soon as a new anything comes out, I mean, if you think about the way people queue and they line up for the new iPhones and so forth, it seems like you're not one of them. You're not one of them, but you understand those people who, yeah, are in the, yeah, who are in that queue. So for that person who's in the queue, knowing that their old iPhone is perfectly fine, why do you think they're standing in that queue? What is the psychology of why they want to consume and they need this thing?
Dopamine. Every time we buy something, dopamine gets released in our brains.
Okay.
Dopamine being the substance that generates pleasure, yes, in our brains.
So you're trying to say that the same, it's almost like an orgasmic experience to be standing in this queue knowing I'm going to get this phone.
The anticipation, of course, and then when you finally have it. I recently read something really interesting, and it's about happiness as an experience and how people are happier or the happiest when they experience something. And then I was thinking, when they are queuing for the actual iPhone, that is the experience, and then in your brain, all sorts of chemical processes are happening. Well, and it's the anticipation from the minute you're browsing online to the minute you have the object in your hands. And this guy takes things a little bit further, and he says, actually, when you get the actual object, your happiness increases like 2 points. Actually, when you buy a BMW, if I ask you in a year some how happy you are, you're not much happier. So it's the whole process of finding something in a catalog and then waiting until it comes into your hands, and then finally you have it, and then the cycle starts again, and then you want a new thing, and so on and so on.
So essentially a brand's job, if you want to have a loyal consumer, is to trigger dopamine.
Simply and biologically put, yes. The thing is, and where anthropology comes in, is that there are contextual factors influencing decisions. So even though we're animals, and yes, we do all operate the same way, my context is different from yours.
Sure.
So in my context, an iPhone 6 may not play such a role. So it comes down to what my experience of pleasure is versus your experience that provides pleasure.
Sure.
And so, it's not the same.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess a brand would need to know what is it that provides pleasure for their different sort of demographics.
Correct.
So if one person is marketing to you, what provides pleasure for you?
For me, myself.
Yes, for you.
For me, it's certainly the experience, so it has to be really, really seamless. Everything has to go very quickly, and I need to find the size, and if I know I'm 4, I need to know that 4 is going to fit me, and, you know, and I know the material, and I know, you know, it's that kind of thing. I'm very
as long as it's
anal
it's
about
quick,
it.
It's quick, and you're very anal. This conversation is getting interesting.
Yeah, so, I'm not like a normal girl. Like, I hate shopping. Like, I don't find the pleasure of
it. Okay, I get it. I get it. And I think what I want to establish quickly for those people who don't understand anthropology, break down a bit more about your studies in anthropology so that we can make that link to marketing.
Well, it's actually quite simple. Anthropologists study culture, any culture, and they study symbols and things that are unseen in that culture.
Mm.
So it's things like, for instance, in these days in social media, it's what language are people using and tacit meanings behind that language. That's a symbol of culture.
Like selfie. Like,
like snackable content, which I use a lot. Like, what does that mean? What is the meaning of that? And then it becomes relevant to marketers for many different reasons. The one being is that we're cross-pollinating, so brands are not local exclusively anymore, and you need to understand different meanings for brands in cultures. But also within the same culture, as I'm explaining, context is really important, and decision-making, because context influences the decisions we make. And as we know, not everybody is the same. We're not all alike.
Sure.
So, and there are products that don't understand, the brands don't understand why aren't we tapping into this market if
now,
we're doing all the right things.
Okay. Now, we're celebrating your 12th year here. You just found out. You thought it was 13.
Yeah. There I am lying to everyone openly.
Now that we're celebrating your 12th year here, that's plenty of time. It's over a decade to have, as an anthropologist, to understand this, the many cultures, and I'm sure you, like myself, are still learning and growing. But which is your favorite culture here?
Well, there are a lot of subcultures. I suppose I still am quite fascinated by youth. It just never ceases to fascinate me. It's just they're forever changing themselves. They're very challenging. They really are hard to get into anything. They change a lot. Like, I gave a talk at this sort of an NGO. It's called Digify. It's a program for guys, very young guys.
Okay.
They train in digital skills. And these guys were asking me the hardest questions. And, you know, I present about anthropology all the time. And these guys were my most challenging audience. And they were really intriguing. So youth, I think.
So youth is your favorite. And then beyond youth, is there sort of a racial, cultural background that you have become do you feel close to the Zulu culture, Afrikaans culture, any Pacific culture?
No. No.
Which is closest to Colombian?
Colored people. It's funny. It's the funniest. Everybody always asks me what's the closest to Hispanic. And I'm like, we're colored because we're very mixed, so we're nothing. And colored people are angry and volatile, like South Americans. Funny enough, I don't know many of them closely, but yeah.
Okay, so when you say angry and volatile, have you ever sort of like cut someone or anything?
No, I've thrown things against walls.
But you haven't cut anyone?
No.
Because you remind me of that scene. You've seen Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Yes.
You remind me of this Penelope Cruz when she was shooting. Remember how violent she was in this film?
She was very crazy.
I could see you shooting someone.
Oh,
no.
My God.
No, I could honestly see you
never
pulling up
life.
And going.
No.
Okay, well, hopefully you don't. But as an anthropologist, we understand why people shoot other people. We understand, you know, sort of we get overwhelmed, dopamine sort of kicks in, and then this sort of thing happens and where we sort of have our conscious sort of overridden at that moment. So our control, we lose control. And I think that's what brands do, right? What brands simply override people's ability to make rational decisions.
Mm.
How does the emotion play into the consumer and their relationship with product?
It's huge. It's huge. It takes you back in time. So some psychologists argue that in culture you have imprints and that are in your brain. They like your DNA, like why you like the smell of some things versus the smell of other things. So I think brands tap into those emotions of nostalgia is a big one. Of survival is also a big one. And things like compassion and like general human values as well, which is why brands that have like a very emotional sort of imprint in people's brains are so long lasting and strong.
Awesome. We have Marcela Ospina on the show today talking about the intersection between anthropology and marketing. Coming up at the end of the show, we have, as always, Ms. Rianette Lebowitz with her cyber health feature sponsored by SafetyNet. So stay tuned. We're going to go to a track now, and then we'll be back chatting to Marcela in a moment.
CliffCentral.com.
I woke up this morning at the top of a building in the city. The stars in the sky and the stars in your eyes look so pretty.
Unreal, uncensored, unradio. CliffCentral.com.
We're back on Unbranded with Marcela Ospino, who is an anthropologist and works in between anthropology and marketing. And we're learning a lot today about what really drives us to consume. Up at the end of the hour, we have Rianette Lebowitz with her cyber health feature. So stay tuned. I want to go back, Marcela, and I want to sort of share some of my thoughts and get your thoughts around some of the quirkier things about human behavior, especially when it comes to gender. I heard somewhere that women wear high heels to mimic a particular positioning in our evolutionary history, to position the derriere in a particular way. What are your thoughts on on that?
I've never really thought about it, to be honest.
Okay. So some sort of scientists believe that what happens is when you put on heels, your thighs tense up, your behind becomes a bit perkier, and it mimics a position, particular sort of signaling to the world. Now, I know this is very controversial, so as an anthropologist, I wanted you to sort of respond. Are you wearing heels today?
I am. And I do it for the same reasons, but I think, listen, to answer your question, it's not so quirky. Unfortunately, my answer is quite nerdy. But there is a component to behavior that is evolutionary. And if you track behavior, you will always find a reason that is evolutionary, like the one you just named, which is mating. So 90% out of 100% of the times, we are doing things so that we can find the person who we're going to reproduce with. But, and there again, anthropology comes in and I suppose any kind of human sciences to counteract those arguments and say, well, yes, sure, but we, at the same time we're evolving, maybe we're evolving in different directions, and you'll see like now with the New Age movements and with things that are more, slightly more spiritual and less geared towards evolution as reproduction.
Sure.
And sure, our behavior starts changing in different directions, and I think it is important, sure, to consider those reasons that are purely instinctive, but to also consider reasons that are cultural, that are about we're running out of resources, maybe reproduction is not so key anymore.
Sure.
Things like that.
Got it. So maybe the deeper driver could be sort of the subconscious deeper driver could be reproduction, but then there's a cultural influence that says that if I can project myself in a particular way, I'm going to be favored and people are going to receive me better, that it's not linked to reproduction.
Correct. But this all happens. What is fascinating about, and I love it, is that this all happens at a subconscious level.
Yes.
So we're not walking around saying, okay, my main goal in life is reproduction. We're walking around thinking we're doing the things we're doing and we just do them.
Sure.
And it is the job of people such as me and others to understand why.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, some other science I read is that when women wear sort of like lipstick and makeup, that it is to mimic ovulation.
Really?
Yeah. That,
wow.
That ultimately when you ovulate, that your cheeks become rosier, your face,
yeah,
your features become more symmetrical and so forth. And you're also, I see you wearing makeup.
I always do.
So you have your
that's
makeup.
That's the thing. And I have high heels.
High heels. So you are sending very strong signals to our our production team.
Sending very strong subconscious signals.
Yes,
awesome.
We know you didn't think about this.
I didn't.
Yes, okay. So if a marketer is able to tap into some of those subconscious drivers, then they can really sort of drive a better relationship with the consumer.
Definitely. They will be very successful.
Very successful. Mm. Awesome. Which is why, for example, Estee Lauder has been extremely successful. I mean, that sort of brand is extraordinary in terms of even when the economy weakens, apparently lipstick sales grow up.
Mm, I've heard that as well.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's go back a little bit. When you are consulting, do you find it easier to work with men or women?
Men.
Really?
Really.
Why?
I have no idea. First of all, I've encountered more men in my career than women, I suppose because there is a gender imbalance in the amount of men in senior positions, and my clients are generally the owners of the agencies or very senior people, and they tend to be men. But secondly, I think there's no... Can I swear?
Sure.
There's no bullshit. There's no pretense of there's no competitiveness. I think there's less ego. They expect X and Y and Z from me, and I deliver, and they match more. And this is also subconscious. They're just straightforward, whereas women are very A, therefore B, therefore C, and then again, very circular, and I don't respond well to that. I like very
straightforward,
sort of a straightforward engagement and a lot of transparency, and I find more of that with men.
Okay. Mm. And do you feel that that's the sort of thing is holding the gender movement back a bit? That the gender unity, the gender equality movement seems to have almost stalled in many cases.
I'll give you another biological reason you like it. I think what's holding, it's actually quite controversial. I think one of the things that holds women back in stepping up into positions is that they want to be mothers. And I know it's changing, and you know, you find in Silicon Valley people are freezing their eggs so that women in tech have babies when they like in their 40s, so that they can sort of achieve a lot up until that point. So it's definitely changing. But I think if you're broody, and if your body's actually asking you and you want to be a mom, I don't care what you say, it is gonna affect and impact your career. There's no way you can do both properly. So that's one of the reasons. But the other reason is access to education. There's many, many reasons. The other is just that there are more men in positions of power. And the others, I also think that women sort of step back, and I wish sometimes they didn't. And in that, I'm quite of a feminist, and I'm all for like women stepping up and, you know, doing what they have to do in business.
If you had kids, how different would your career be?
Very. Very, because right now I'm planning on having an international presence, and I don't think this would be feasible with a husband and a child. Like I could, but not like I'm planning to. Like I'm going to Mexico in March, and I have the flexibility to do it. I don't think I will have as much flexibility if I had a baby. Unfortunately.
Okay. So are your eggs frozen? Are you waiting till you? At a certain age before you decide
I'm
to
I'm going to this year.
You're
going to
freeze your eggs this year?
I'm freezing my eggs.
Wow.
That's how much I'm pro this approach.
Wow.
Yep.
So is there a website someone can go to if they are a young, agile professional who wants to chart their career and they want to spend 15 solid years in their career, but they want to freeze their eggs? Is there someone where you can recommend they go?
But there's fertility, I think it's Fertility Clinic.
The Fertility Clinic.
Yeah, but I think bear in mind, women don't come to these decisions very easily. I think these are things in the States that are being pushed by their employers, and I think it goes as far as they pay for the freezing of the eggs.
Oh, wow.
It is quite hectic.
So you have to pay for your own freezing.
I have to, yeah, because I don't have a boss. Yeah, I work for myself. But let's bear in mind that's not the reason why I'm doing it.
Okay. No, I get it. I completely get it. I'm with you. Do you take interns? Like if there's a young person who wants to work with you, do you accept internships?
Yes, I'm looking for one at the moment.
Are you really?
Yes.
Because I have someone that I think would work well with
you. Awesome. Okay.
But the problem is they're a female.
No, that's fine. Oh, no.
So let's quickly move. I want to just move to some sort of strategic conversations. Mm. For a marketer looking to build stronger relationships, what is one of the things they need to be thinking about? It's 2015. And they want to ultimately position their brand to have a tighter relationship. If you were advising Cliff Central, you know, clearly we haven't done a good job because you haven't listened to us. This is the first exposure to us. What could we have done differently to get you engaged to Cliff Central? By the way, what type of radio do you listen to?
None.
None.
See, again, I'm like a terrible.
So we're
going
to struggle to get
study.
You. We're going to struggle. But you're a DJ and you love music.
Yeah, but it's techno. No one listens
okay.
to that.
So if we have a techno station, if we have a techno hour, we could potentially get to you.
Maybe, you know what? Okay, so to answer your question, so I think you would need a very strong content strategy, but content that lives within other platforms.
Okay, wait, I'm making notes. Okay, so if Cliff Central, we're going to build our brand, we're going to get some free advertising from you right now. I mean, we're going to some free strategic
free advice.
Free advice. Okay, so we need strong content.
Yeah, but not exclusive to you. You have that. You have content that you're making. You have that because you're a radio station. So I would say that content would need to live separately from Cliff Central.
Okay.
And then that content, sort of like that content, will have to be directing traffic to Cliff Central.
I see.
You know what I mean?
So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
Is that we need to separate content on different platforms?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then interconnect those platforms, and hopefully that traffic will come from different sources.
Got it.
So that what you do with that is that also it allows you to target different people that wouldn't necessarily come to you, like such as myself.
Yes.
You know, when the only time I was really interested in you guys was you guys are doing something with WeChat, right?
Yes.
And so I was really interested in the co-branding exercise, and I found that like it was a good move. move.
Wow, so that's a perfect example.
That is a good example.
Integrating collaboration type of thing.
Okay. A lot of it. If you read, it wasn't published, but I was on Maxon Media this week, and I wrote a trends piece with like 7 or 8 key trends for this year.
Okay.
And one of them is collaboration, but it's multidiscipline as well.
Okay.
So it's like putting, like, sort of what you're doing, like sort of someone with a science background in a context that is quite creative, then see what comes out of that collaboration,
awesome,
as opposed to you just leveraging on people who are claimed to be experts on their field.
Sure.
But all the expertise is coming from the same industry. So I think that's a mistaken approach.
Okay. So let's tap into a couple more of those trends. What is one of your favorite trends of the year? So collaboration is one of them.
Yeah, well, the other one that I quite like is how people centralize information. So they don't want to go and search for information in separate different sources. They want all the information to live in one single, whether it is a platform, an app, a feed. They want everything be fed to them. Now, this, I'm very critical of this, because what it's causing is, let's say with politics, is that it biases your views on the world. Because then what you're doing is filtering all your information according to what you like. So you're not exposed to a general and broad view, which politically can be immensely dangerous, and in the context of this country, extremely dangerous. The other thing it means is that you become less critical. And especially if you're a young person, and then that's why I was telling you, youth fascinates me. The last interviews I did with youth were like, you almost cannot market anything to them that is not relevant to their lives at this particular point in time. And what is relevant to them is quite limiting. It's fashion. Mm. It's basically fashion, music, and they're not interested in a broader context. And it's quite, again, how do you target them and how do you make sure your content is touching them when they're filtering all the information and it's like this narrow channel?
Got it.
See?
Okay. So, you know, we're back and forth between some trends and you consulting us. What would be one of the biggest piece of advice you would have for Cliff Central? Let's say Gareth is sitting here right now, right? And he is going to pay you 1 million rand because he wants this thing to work.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the biggest piece of advice you have for Gareth?
No, well, I will tell him I can't do that. You need to put me in front of consumers. You need to give me resources and see. I will probably look at the business. I will come and live here for like a week or so, meet every one of you, see how you do your jobs, what the rationale behind doing your jobs is, and really have an in-depth view of the business as
a business.
And then a view of consumers that you guys want to target. And maybe you're targeting the wrong people or whatever.
Because if you're in marketing, you listen to this is grown people stuff. She is basically saying, I will not come and give you some basic generic template. I am going to come and I am going to absorb myself into the business and make sure I understand it before I offer any prescriptive advice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Now let's go back to these trends real quick. Okay. So collaboration, understanding these sort of youth patterns and understand how they sort of serve youth. What else is on this list?
As far as I can remember, is that snackable content, so content that is very quick and short, and multidisciplinary knowledge. And the other thing is the integration between creativity and marketing and business. So how can you, as a creative person, maybe integrate better with business processes? Because I've been doing so much B2B work that I've realized the biggest disconnect is how creative people don't see business objectives for what they are. And I think that has a lot to do with that, with not questioning what the business brief is, what this person sit on the client's shoes and see what their KPIs are.
Got it.
You see. Got and it. I think we're going to see more and more of creative thinking in business. Not all brands will follow this, only the progressive ones.
Sure.
There are people already doing it, like Discovery does a good job.
Sure.
And some of my clients are banks, and I think even though they don't do it properly by any means, they want to.
Got it.
So, and you do unfortunately or fortunately, you need a budget backing this up, because if you want to hire someone like me, then you need extra money to do that. And on top of that, you need a creative person and a marketing strategy.
Got it. Now, when you look at what's really sort of happening and evolving in the social media space, are you a slave to social media? Are you like up at midnight? You said you're a single. Or like, do you have a relationship with someone you never even met before?
Not like, at all. No.
Like you met them virtually and they like to speak to you and they satisfy some sort of dopamine sort of rush.
Yeah, some sort of, no, I eat chocolate for that.
Okay.
Thank God for chocolate.
Okay.
And music. No, I'm funny enough because I like music so much. I am crazy about posting like songs and sets and music, and I'm on SoundCloud all day.
Okay.
I use Twitter a lot because of my work, so I follow a lot of experts in my field, and I do try and post a lot. And I'm a slave to Facebook. It's the funniest thing, but not for gossips and things like that. But I also am one of those people who filters information, so I follow Fast Company, New York Times,
sure.
The Economist, and then yes, music and a lot of DJs and a lot of artists.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your favorite sort of tech music is what?
Well, the labels are in Berlin, most of them.
Okay.
And it's, I would say it's deep techno, so it's not really hard and it doesn't go really fast, but it has like very big bass lines and weird sounds.
Okay. You have offered South Africa a lot of value, and you've come and offered this show an extraordinary list of opportunity to engage this subject. I really am grateful you came on the show. I want to know,
thanks.
So in the next few months, you're going to go to Mexico, and Mexicans are going to tell you you need to come back to South Africa because South Africa needs you. And so I'm just letting you know in advance what's going to happen. But we really do hope you have a really lovely time in Mexico. How long are you going to be there?
I'm going to be for a week, but before then I'm going to be at South by Southwest, the tech conference. Expect a lot of feeds from me. And there, the most famous anthropologist in business will be speaking.
She's
the head of innovation at Intel.
Oh, really?
So and she's going to be speaking about wearing tech, so technology and fashion. So
you may come back
dying.
With some funny glasses that you can see.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
But do you think the world is going in that direction where two people making love will be wearing glasses and you'll be able to simulate the experience with each other?
Yeah, I think it is. But as always, it's early adopters, or who's going to use that, or who's going to... It's going to go down to that. Like Japanese, of course, they are all up for these things.
Yes.
I think in South Africa, we're conservative with everything.
Sure.
You know, so...
So would you wear these glasses?
I'll try them. I would try them.
Okay.
Yeah. For sure, I would try many things.
Yes.
In life.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. So people can follow you on Twitter at @Marcella_OSPINA.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Yes. We really look forward to getting to know you more on Cliff Central. We hope to have you back when you come back from Mexico to share some of the insights you learned from this conference.
Awesome.
So all the best and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, we're back on Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and that was Marcella Ospina, anthropologist working really strategically in the sort of anthropological and marketing space. Really great insights. We're so grateful to have had her on the show, and we're so excited. We've got Rianette Lebowitz back for the Cyber Health feature sponsored by SafetyNet. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you, Timothy.
It's really good to see you. You saved me last week. I don't know if you knew you were going to be my angel last week, but you did. And that's just how you roll, though.
I'm glad I could be that for you.
Thank you. What do you have for us today?
So I would like to invite people to please let us know what they would like to learn about cyber health and, you know, what can we talk about that would really interest them. But for today, I would like to explore the idea of being anonymous in digital space.
Okay.
So,
isn't that like an oxymoron?
Yeah.
How are you going to be anonymous in the digital space?
Well, that's why it's such an interesting topic.
Okay.
So, to have the opinion, or to have the option to be known as your true self or to hide behind a digital mask. So, as you know, last week Safety Net was one of the partners at the Back to School campaign on Safer Internet Day.
Yes.
And the theme was, let's create a better internet together.
Yes.
So, four countries took part. There were Senegal, Nigeria, Kenya, and South Africa. And locally, there were about 80 learners from various schools. And they had to do projects like come up with a sketch illustrating the dangers of the web, and another group had to debate the pros and cons of being anonymous online.
Okay. Okay.
And it was fascinating because at the end of the day, we used Google Hangouts to compare the different countries and what they thought of this. But those in the pro-anonymity group argued points like whether information and whatever information an individual posts online won't hurt them in the future. I mean, think about the CVs nowadays. People don't ask you for your CV. They Google you.
Yes.
So it won't hurt you in that way. Other pro positions argued that an entirely anonymous internet would protect young people's identities from potential abusers and molesters and so forth. But, and then, of course, there's the whole privacy thing as well. But then the anti-anonymity group argued that being anonymous was often the very thing which led to bullying online. And they also pointed out that if it were the default setting online, there would not be real interaction on the web, which is obvious. But imagine now these dating sites and you build a relationship with this guy or girl and you really love each other now, you know, after a couple of weeks or months, and you meet and you find it's your cousin sitting across the table from you. I mean, they are really big.
Yeah, that's problems a problem.
Here. So what do you think, Timothy?
I think that this idea of anonymity has, you know, specifically in dialogue, could have a role. So in political discourse, if someone hears an opinion but they don't know that you are white or black or colored, then it could have some value. But I think when it comes to very personal things, it could be highly misleading and create a just drama.
Yeah, yes. That's an interesting one because I'm of the opinion that closed groups and communities will become more the norm.
Closed groups.
Yes, and closed conversations. Like, you know, if you look at WhatsApp groups being, set for youth and for everybody. I mean, we all use those groups. But it's in our nature to have the need to be accepted and acknowledged and loved. And the need for real people and true relationships and physical connections is really prevalent. And even people who have become accustomed to live in, you know, their own cocoons and who only interact online, they will have that feeling of that void, and no digital communication is going to fill that. So I guess it's again up to balancing it.
But that's where we started. It started like with America Online. It was just very intimate chat rooms. Are you saying we're going back to where we started? Are we not evolving?
I think we're evolving, but we're also realizing that sometimes you have to stick to the basics and the principles of what's good for you. So but thinking about this concept of being anonymous, how will this impact celebrities and what we know about them? You know, how boring could it become? And we've spoken about the fact that everybody's got a camera that can take photos or videos of you without your consent.
Oh, yeah.
So now listen to this. There is a development that might have the paparazzi frown and worry about their income. An article on Yahoo Tech by Alyssa Bereznik speaks about our smartphone-saturated world and the threat of an unflattering photo popping up online, but not if you're wearing a suit coated with glass nanospheres. This is the concept behind Better Brand's latest line of crowdfunded clothing, a set of pieces that appear Clorox bright in photographs, and that, in the paparazzi's worst nightmare, also obscures the wearer's face. So, as Wire.com reports, the clothes use the same kind of light bouncing material you might find on your set of running shoes. So, with these items, Better Brand and designer Chris Holmes aren't necessarily aiming for visibility. In fact, it's quite the opposite.
Wow.
So the line is made up of a men's jacket, a scarf, a hat, and something called the flashback Illuminati suit. And the items range from, okay, unfortunately, we're talking dollars here, but $50 to about $400. And they're not entirely practical. They speak to a larger trend of artists and designers seeking a way to push back, and especially against our increasingly invasive technological landscape.
Wow. So if you are on a boat and you want to sunbathe nude, this sort of technology, I mean, do they have shades that can sort of like put out these radio sort of signals that block a paparazzi from seeing you on the boat?
Well, there could be some interesting bikinis to wear because there's some more. I like how Rob Walker puts it as the anti-tech clothing movement in a bargaining genre of fashion. They say no matter what form it takes, as he says, they all have one uniting quality, and that is they respond to the annoyances, incursions, and even threats of technology with clever technology jiu-jitsu. So, artist and designer Adam Harvey's forays into blocking advanced facial recognition technology.
Wow.
This is quite interesting to me. Brought us both a crop top hoodie that blocked drone surveillance. Can you imagine?
Wow.
There are people who have, actually have problems with drone surveillance, and a unique style of makeup meant to throw off advanced software.
There's
an interesting idea for makeup artists. Focus Live Gear, on the other hand, apparently cuts off your entire cell phone's connection when you wear it. So there's a bikini we can design.
There you go.
Though Holmes' line is fun to play with, he says he hopes it will send a subtle message to the world's overkill photographers and just encourage people to put down the camera and enjoy the moment.
Yes.
Live in that moment.
Please, go.
And, again, it brings us back to, are you the guy helping the person who's in trouble, or are you the one who's filming it, waiting, can't wait to put it on social platforms? So I would love to hear what people think. Should it be anonymous? Should we know who we're talking to and have their real profile pictures?
So, yes, you can send us tweets at CliffCentralCom or at SaveTNet on Twitter, or even me. You can send me a message at Timothy Maurice. Let us know what your thoughts are. I am in completely split about this. I think half of me, I'd like to be anonymous. The other half, I kind of want people to know. I want to be able to engage people sort of like with the walls down. Ultimately, where do you see this going as sort of an expert in this field?
Well, I bet you people have gone and Googled you to see what you look like and what your the face behind the voice.
Sure.
So imagine they can't find that. I wonder what the impact on the connection will be.
Yes.
Personally, I like eyeball time. I like to see you and just engage with you on that level. Like I say, the youth is very interesting. They had a really strong argument in terms of, they're pro this anonymous movement, but it was also good to see the balance in terms in the room and cross country. Yeah,
but I think that's you look at the entire globe now. I think the entire world will shift at different times.
Yeah.
So I think some regions of the world, like you may find Japan, for example, as Marcella was mentioning, they may go in a direction faster than South Africa. Now, how do you see South Africa playing on the global sort of digital tech sort of sphere? Are we ahead of the curve? Are we behind? What's happening here?
I think we engage with people around the world, so we go with that flow. If you think about gaming and how people are interacting and actually becoming so addicted to gaming, they're playing with people from all over the world.
That's true.
Whether they are playing under their real names or in real profiles, we don't know, and that's arguably. But I think that we are not far behind. If you look at statistics in terms of just Gauteng and the youth, 97% of them have access to internet.
Okay.
And a big majority of them have their own laptops. And most of them, of course, have their own phones. But so that to me is a good thing, sign saying we are connected. And in terms of the world, luckily, if you think about the Eastern countries and gaming problems, we don't have as many digital or gaming rehab centers yet. But I do think that it's becoming
coming.
More and more of a need.
So, will you be launching some digital rehab centers?
We're planning to, yes.
Are you really? Awesome. Well, I am really grateful for you sharing your insights as always. Anything else, any other thing you want to say before we close?
Well, if people are interested about these nanotechnologies and so forth, they can see the article on our SaveTNet Facebook page, and please share your thoughts.
SaveTNet Facebook page. Go there, share your thoughts. Thank you so much, Rianette. Thank you so much again, Marcella. And thank you for listening. And we look forward to chatting to you again next week on Unbranded. We out.